we're scoring about 5% in our test of what's the universe made of.
The Bible describes the real world as we know it. It has the ring of truth.
What kind of country is it that we live in when you can't tell a child why his father was killed because you didn't want him to grow up hating white people?
Does the human race deserve to continue?
From the Center for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. This is Justine Toe. And I'm sorely tempted to break out in song because...
All by myself, don't wanna be all by myself anymore.
You have no messages.
Now, mine is not quite a Bridget Jones situation, you know, alone and sobbing into my Shiraz on the cusp of Christmas because I have no new messages. But basically, for this episode, it's just a Justine Festival slash pity party here at Life and Faith. Your regular hosts, Simon and Natasha, have scarpered off before Christmas. Simon is on long service leave in Canada, and Natasha is off to the US for a white Christmas, a spot of skiing, and then a visit to Slovakia. And this leaves yours truly all alone this Christmas, except for Al, who's here in the studio recording this for me, and Anna and Annette, who are also in the office today. But for all artistic intents and purposes, I am all alone, and could really use a song or two to lift my mood. So I thought it was time to rebroadcast an old Christmas show we did for Life and Faith back in 2014, where Simon, Natasha, and John talk about the fascinating history of Christmas carols. In the episode, Natasha shares some really interesting moments from the history of O Holy Night, her favourite carol. But I have to say she left out a completely crucial tidbit about it. She totally forgot to mention that O Holy Night is featured in that iconic Christmas movie and comedy caper from the 90s, Home Alone.
Where are you going? We're going to miss the plane!
When the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation...
Did we miss the plane? No, you just made it.
Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself...
I have a terrible feeling. Christmas.
Did you lock up?
Let yeah. yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. What else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Ah! Home Alone.
Which, wouldn't you believe it, is completely relevant to my situation today. Yes, I did just compare myself to the 8-year-old Macaulay Culkin left behind by my Life and Faith parents, or something like that. On a more serious note, in the episode, John also makes reference to the depressing year that was 2014. Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 disappeared in March, and a few months later, another plane was shot down over eastern Ukraine, even though it was just making its regular way from Kuala Lumpur to Amsterdam. And just 10 days before Christmas, the Lindt Cafe in Sydney's Martin Place was under siege. But it strikes me that what my colleagues say in this episode holds true for any year, that despite the mess of the world, the hope of Christmas is that God has not abandoned any of us. Have a listen and see what you think.
Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm John Dixon.
They're everywhere at this time of year. They're on the radio. They're in every store and cafe, carols by candlelight and all that sort of stuff. Now, whether you absolutely love them or can't wait until you don't have to hear jingle bells for another year, Christmas carols are a remarkably persistent Christmas tradition.
And they're actually a lot older than you might imagine. You know, our very first descriptions of a Christian church service are the letter from Pliny to Emperor Trajan asking whether he should keep killing Christians. And he says, the only thing I can find wrong with them is they get up really early and sing a hymn to Christ as if he were a god. Right? And so this reference in the year 110 to Christians singing about the incarnation. And our earliest hymns are actually in the New Testament, Philippians 2, Colossians 1, and they're both about the incarnation, how God became man. And then in the 4th century, we have St. Ambrose writing hymns to Christ as God as well. So it's a really ancient tradition that we still pick up. It's lovely.
And anyone getting up early to sing in the morning can be annoying, admittedly.
He actually says they sing antiphonally, which means to sing to each other. So I would sing a line, then Natasha would sing a line. Then it's lovely.
So this tradition of Christmas carols really takes us back through the history of Western music and of Western Christianity. There was a bit of a hiatus for Christmas carols and for Christmas traditions generally. With the Puritans, both in Britain and then in the new colonies in America, they were pretty anti all of these kinds of celebrations. But the Victorians, great era, got back into Christmas in a big way. And the carols that we still sing today, like the First Noel and Hark the Herald Angels Sing, date from this period, from the first half of the 19th century.
Can I interrupt you there? People's impression of the Victorian era is that it's very stiff. And you just said the lovely Victorian era celebrated this stuff.
Well, they were very big into tradition. They invented a lot of the things that we think of as traditionally English, and they kind of decided at the time that they were traditionally English, even though a lot of them were brand new or imported from Europe.
Well, I have a bit of an issue too with the idea that the Puritans were against any kind of fun, but let's leave that for the time being. There's always been a bit of a deliberate sense of nostalgia about Christmas carols, a bit of self-conscious tradition-making, if you like. And actually, a lot of English Christmas traditions, many of which persist today in our Australian summer, strangely, were introduced by Queen Victoria's husband, Albert, who was German, and he imported some of the Christmas elements of Europe into Britain to make things a bit more festive.
Yeah, and Christmas really has a way of absorbing things into its orbit. It's a bit of a cultural juggernaut. So really, lots of songs that don't have that much to do with Christmas have become Christmas carols. Jingle Bells, for example, was actually written for Thanksgiving by an American composer. And Handel's Messiah, it's really about Easter, but it's often performed at Christmas.
Yeah, of course, lots of Christmas carols or songs these days don't have anything to do with the original Christmas story. You might think of White Christmas or We Wish You a Merry Christmas, but many of the traditional carols celebrating Jesus' birth continue to be popular, and not only with believers.
John, why do you think these old carols continue to be so popular?
I think for a few reasons. One is that the idea is so excellent, the idea that God became man. I mean, even if you don't think it's true, it would be so good if it were, that the God of the universe would touch the earth. And so Christmas, I think, takes us to the very pointy end of the Christian claim. That's the first reason. I think the second is because Christmas was so important to Christians, the hymn writers, the Charles Wesleys and so on, would throw their best efforts into producing songs for Christmas or songs that relate to that idea of the incarnation. And so some of the best tunes popped out of that period. And the other reason, of course, is that if someone's vaguely going to be attached to the church, they're going to be attached to church at Christmas time. And so these great songs are going to catch on to more people than the regular songs that are part of the normal Christian calendar.
So are you a bigger fan of the older carols than the newer ones?
Depends what you mean by old. Do you mean the 4th century ones?
I bet you like the 4th century ones.
Love the 4th century ones, particularly the Te Deum.
I don't think you're going to sing those at carol services this year, are you?
No. For me, Hark the Herald Angels Sing is the cracking one. Because, I guess, partly because it's such great theology. So it's a Charles Wesley hymn, of course. Back in the day when our best theologians were our best poets and hymn writers. They were old days. But, one of the opening lines are, "Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled." I think that's beautiful. "Offspring of the Virgin's womb, veiled in flesh the Godhead see." Like, there's such a rich willingness to put profound theology into poetry. And I feel very attracted to that kind of thing. Natasha, I bet you have a couple of favourite carols.
I have an absolute favourite, which is O Holy Night.
O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining.
night of our dear Savior's birth.
I just think it's the most beautiful song. It's also got a lot of really interesting history around it. So it was a 19th century carol. It was written in 1847. There was a priest in a small French town who asked the local commissioner of wines, I don't even know what that is, he asked him to write a poem for a Christmas mass. And he wasn't exactly a churchgoer, but he agreed to do it. He wrote it on a coach ride on the way to Paris and then decided that it was a song and he needed to find a composer for it. So the guy he asked was actually a Jewish musician, and their joint effort was performed 3 weeks later, and it really quickly became very widely loved and a big favourite in France. But then the church later found out that it had been written by an atheist and a Jew and tried to kind of stop people singing it, but they already loved it, so it stuck.
Divine the night when Christ was born.
There's also a story about this being important for an American abolitionist. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, the guy who first translated into English was an American abolitionist. He was especially keen on the third verse, which, I mean, we probably don't all know the third verse that well, but it talks about how the slave is our brother and how Christ will break the chains. There is another story as well about this carol from the Franco-Prussian War. So in 1871, on Christmas Eve, the French and the Germans are fighting each other, and one French soldier is supposed to have jumped out of his trench and started, you know, no weapon, started singing this song and sang the whole thing. Nobody shot him. And then afterwards, a German soldier got out and started singing a German carol, and they all call the truce for Christmas Day.
And Natasha, while we continue to press our Holy Night and its history, what about the story about it being the first to be played on the radio?
Yeah, this is probably my favourite. So Christmas Eve again, 1906, there's a guy called Reginald Fessenden. He was a university professor, and he used to work for Thomas Edison. He, on this particular occasion, had figured out how to use a new type of generator to speak into a microphone. And for the first time in history, a human voice was broadcast over the airwaves. So the first thing that he did was read the story of Jesus' birth from the Gospel of Luke. And then he picked up his violin and played O Holy Night. So you have radio operators and wireless owners at newspapers who were used to, on their machines, just getting coded impulses. For the first time hearing someone's voice and the first song that was ever played on radio was O Holy Night.
Yeah, that is amazing. Now, apart from that, though, why is this your favourite?
Well, really, it's my favourite because I think both the lyrics and the music are so beautiful, especially the first verse. You have lines like, "He appeared and the soul felt its worth." This idea that Jesus is coming, God taking on human form, really shows how precious human life is. The soul felt its worth. And the next line is, "A thrill of hope, the weary soul rejoices." That sense of the world aching and really needing this hope that Christmas offers.
Oh, Simon, I bet you can't better that. What's your favourite carol?
I want to say one that I don't like. That's a bit of a dampener on things,
Scrooge.
Isn't it? I know, I'm a bit of the Scrooge here today, but I don't like Away in a Manger.
It's a big favourite of lots of people.
Yeah, no, I just don't like it. It seems to sentimentalise the whole thing.
Can back you up on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked about it, but we perhaps should over Christmas. I just think it sentimentalises everything to the point of irrelevance, which is a danger at Christmas time, I think. The sweet baby Jesus we're hearing about in this carol, but you don't get any sense that he might actually grow up at any point. And so this idea that even as a baby he doesn't cry, no crying he makes, I just want to throw up when I hear that bit. That's not the Christian story, of course. Jesus is meant to be fully God, but also fully human. And if he's certainly not human if he doesn't cry. So, yeah, let me just throw that in there to begin with. But not being totally negative, I can also talk about ones that I do like, and there's plenty of them. But I'd have to say Joy to the World is one of my favourites.
Why? Why does it win?
Well, this is a pretty old carol, and I tend to like some of the old ones. But it was originally written in the 18th century by Isaac Watts, and originally about Christ's second coming. But this, John, this is not new, is it? A lot of these carols are really talking about the second coming of Christ.
That is a very traditional way of thinking about what we call Christmas, but has been called Advent, you know, the coming. And through Christian history, it hasn't been all about the first coming of Jesus. All of the traditional prayers and hymns and liturgy surrounding Advent were about both comings, the lowly coming and the glorious coming to judge the world. So you see this in that 4th century hymn, the Te Deum, that I mentioned. It talks about Jesus not abhorring the Virgin's womb when he was incarnated, then talks about him coming back as our judge, like a few lines apart. But you see it in hymns like Once in Royal David City. The first stanza is all about the lowly entry of Jesus into the world, but the last stanza of that carol is all about when he comes in his great glory, and we all see him in his true form. So that two horizons, the lowly and the glorious comings of Jesus, is actually what Christmas is meant to be about.
Yeah, so joy to the world. It's a cracker of a carol. And the story of Jesus ought to be about joy. Christianity is about joy. It's about hope. And sometimes that's set against great darkness, which I sometimes think is when it's most effective. And I feel like some of us this year may be feeling that. It also focuses on the cosmic significance of Jesus' birth. You get that line, heaven and nature sing. Then fields and floods, rocks, hills and plains, they all repeat the sounding joy. It's this sort of cosmic nature of this very domestic scene. I love that because it sends chills up my spine. And the story, of course, of Jesus, if it is true, it is a cosmic story. It changes everything. And as C.S. Lewis used to say, this story is either of absolute importance or it's of no importance whatsoever. The one thing it cannot be is moderately important. So I feel like joy to the world sort of connects the kind of cosmic to our everyday lives and the things that we long for in life. This carol talks about love and truth and grace, and we could all do with a bit more of that.
It's a really upbeat, joyful tune as well. We often finish carol services on this song.
Heading out to whatever challenges Christmas will present for you.
But of course, it's not talking about happiness. You know, the joy to the world is despite the messiness of the world. So you think of a year like we've had on the world stage this year, from, you know, planes missing in the Indian Ocean, falling down over Ukraine. Think of what's happened on the cricket pitch in recent weeks and, of course, in Martin Place very recently. It would be wrong to think that Christmas were about happiness. It is about joy, though, that sense that despite everything, God is for us and he's come toward us as one of us. And that does give a perspective and a hope that is real joy.
Yeah, Joy to the World has that great line, no more let thorns or sorrows grow, that it's not a happiness in spite of what happens in the world, the darkness in the world, but that the Christmas story promises that something's going to be done about it. There's going to be an end to those things.
From all of us here at Centre for Public Christianity and Life and Faith, we wish you Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
That's it for Life and Faith this year. Thanks for coming along for the ride with us. We look forward to sharing more stories with you next year. But for now, have a safe and blessed Christmas from, well, me. The last one standing at CPX for 2018.